From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Becoming Aware, fascinating. Lisa Gar joins us. Here's what's happening. An unbelievable auto recall. Federal transportation officials have announced that the Japanese company, Takata, has agreed to recall roughly 34 million vehicles because of defective airbags. It is the largest auto recall in U.S. history. Takata agreed to recall these vehicles amid mounting pressure and fines from federal regulators over roughly the past year. Now, the airbag manufacturer was being fined, get this, $14,000 a day. So far, those fines amount to about $1.2 million. The announcement was made by the heads of the Department of Transportation and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. At issue is the chemical that inflates the airbags. It can explode with too much force, blowing apart a metal inflator and sending shrapnel into the passenger compartment. The faulty inflators are responsible now for 6 deaths and more than 100 injuries worldwide. 11 automakers, including Honda and Toyota, have already recalled 17 million vehicles in the U.S. and more than 36 million worldwide because of that problem. Well, here's some bad news for you coffee lovers brewing your morning Java with one of those single-serve coffee makers. According to a swab test, over 4 million colonies of harmful bacteria and mold found lurking in the water tank, the coffee pod compartment, the spout, and the tray on more than half of the 28 machines tested. Clean your machines, I guess. Millions of young people can be at risk of Alzheimer's disease and other mental illnesses in later life by playing action video games, according to new research. Scientists say that players navigate the screen using a key area of the brain called the caudate nucleus, which leads to loss of matter in the brain. Previous studies have shown reduced volume in the brain, the area which controls memory, learning, emotion, is associated with neurological and psychological disorders, including dementia and depression. Canadian teams say that if action gamers have less gray matter, as people who rely on the caudate nucleus normally do, then they become more prone to mental illness when they get older. The Second Amendment Foundation has won preliminary injunction against the District of Columbia and the Metropolitan Police Chief's enforcement of a requirement to provide a good reason when applying for a concealed carry permit. Judge Frederick Scullin ordered the city to enjoin them from denying handgun carry licenses to applicants who meet the requirements of the D.C. Code. Let's check in with the author of More Guns, Less Crime, John Lott. John, somewhat of a victory for people, isn't it?
It's an important step in the process. Unfortunately, this is just the lowest level court that's there. And the appeals court above that is one of the more liberal ones in the country right now. So I don't think it will survive that, but it would likely then go on to the Supreme Court.
In most states, John, if you want to have a concealed carry permit, you merely fill it out and qualify for it. In D.C., what they were saying before is you had to have a good reason for it, right?
Right, right. 42 of the states have what they call right to carry laws, that once you meet certain objective rules and you apply for a permit, then it should be granted. In this case, in 8 states and the District of Columbia, you had to go and demonstrate to some public official that you had a good reason for doing it. And in D.C., they've only approved like 6 permits there because they've said that everybody else hasn't had a good enough reason. And the judge said, you can't do it this way. You have to have an objective system there where you have, once somebody meets the rules, then they can be granted a permit.
Okay, John, thank you. A full-blown humanitarian crisis has developed from ISIS takeover of Ramadi in Iraq, as an estimated 25,000 refugees are now making their way east toward Baghdad, seeking food and shelter wherever they can find it and facing the prospect of being blocked from the capital city amid fears that their ranks could also include militants. The United Nations and other aid agencies are handing out food, water, medical supplies along a 60-mile route between the cities, but the situation is worsening, dwindling supplies, and reports that the Iraqi army was blocking the refugees from reaching the safety of Baghdad. What a mess over there. Saudi Arabia is advertising 8 new openings for executioner jobs as beheadings in the country are soaring this year. The positions, posted online by Saudi Arabia's Civil Service Ministry, state that no special qualifications are needed. The jobs also involve performing amputations for those convicted of lesser crimes. Great government there in Saudi Arabia. Hmm? 4 ghost hunters are facing felony charges for breaking into a historic church in Litchfield, Minnesota. The Nest Church has been the target of vandals for years. Ghost hunters have posted YouTube videos of what they say are confirmed sightings of ghosts at the site. One video from another person in Minnesota in 2012 shows ghost hunters near this historic church. Let's check in, though, with one of the greatest paranormal researchers out there today, Paul Eno. Paul, so they get arrested. What did they do? Just trespassing, or what is it?
Well, they were doing what, unfortunately, I think a number of ghost hunters do, George. In this case, they were breaking some windows. They broke some windows in an outbuilding and in the church, which is a functioning church and very historic. And they went looking for ghosts. There are 5 people buried there who were killed. The first one's killed in the U.S. Dakota War, as it's called, the Sioux Uprising of 1862. So these people get in there, they're self-appointed. They really don't know anything. People think they're ghost hunters, and they go out and they do things like this. In 2013, a mansion in New Orleans was burned down to the ground, a historic place, and a bunch of ghost hunters arrested for that. What I'm waiting for is the civil suits to start arising.
That's right.
The actions of these people, you know.
What do you recommend, Paul, to ghost hunters who really want to try to do a good job, but, you know, they can't violate the private lands and things like that? What should they do?
Well, a lot of the sites you look at, you know, despite all the silly ghosts and stuff on them, have warnings about trespassing and being respectful to property, but I don't think that quite does it. You know, as I've talked with you before about this, and I don't think they should do it at all. It's not a hobby that should be engaged in, such as bird watching,
right,
or butterfly collecting. It's very dangerous, and people just shouldn't do it. Sure, read about it. We'll watch the History Channel, but don't even start.
Paul, I enjoyed meeting you this weekend in Denver. I had a good time.
Yeah, very good. And I also enjoyed meeting you, George.
Paul will be on a future Beyond Belief television show. That's what we were taping this past weekend. Federal government hopes to reverse America's declining honeybee and monarch butterfly populations by making more federal land bee-friendly and spending more money on research and considering the use of less pesticides. Scientists say the bees, crucial to pollinate many crops, have been hurt by a combination of declining nutrition, mites, disease, and pesticides. The federal plan is an all-hands-on-deck strategy that calls on everyone, from federal bureaucrats to citizens, to do what they can to save the bees, which provide more than $15 billion in value to the U.S. economy. U.S. researchers say they can distinguish individual whales based on the sound of the animals' voices. Using a large set of recordings of North Atlantic right whales, they found that detailed analysis of one particular type of call allowed them to single out individual whales. The biologists want to explore whether acoustic identification could be useful for monitoring whales in the wild. They do communicate with each other. Up next, Michael Tellinger joins us. You know, one of his books, Slave Species of the Gods, we're going to find out a little bit more about the Anunnaki and his research on Coast to Coast AM. Can't believe Memorial Day right around the corner. Kick off the start of summer with the number one travel radio from only Sea Crane. Sea Crane CC Skywave Radio, and it is a dandy, is the ultimate compact globe-trotting receiver. Now, the Skywave is the perfect travel radio. You can take it anywhere. The Skywave has great AM and FM reception, but like all other Sea Crane radios, the focus is reception, and it is fantastic. MB from Pleasanton, California says, CC Radio has made another outstanding product, and it's perfect for travel. I take mine all over the place, hikes, campouts, and I will now be taking it along with my SkyWave. A lot of radio and versatility in one great little package, a great job, CC Radio. So you can pick this up, this incredible radio, the SkyWave, and you won't be disappointed. Simply call them at 1-800-522-8866. That's 1-800-522-8863, rather, or go to ccrane.com. And welcome back to Coast. Michael Tellinger, of course, is a scientist in the true sense of the word. He doesn't shy away from controversial issues, and he looks at every clue meticulously. After a 30-year-long obsession with the origins of humankind and genetic anomalies of our species, he wrote Slave Species of the God. And here he is back on Coast to Coast, Michael Tellinger. Michael, and I'm going to see you at Contact in the Desert in a couple weeks. How are you?
Excellent, George. Nice to hear your voice. And, yeah, I'll see you at Contact in the Desert next weekend, I guess.
We sure will. So when do you start traveling? Because you're where are you right now?
I'm in South Africa. I'm talking to you from my home. And we'll be traveling in probably about a week.
And you then have a tour all around the country, don't you?
Yeah, we got a tour. We generally use Contact in the Desert, which is such a beautiful place in the USA, at Joshua Tree, as a springboard for the rest of our tour of the USA. And it's become an annual event now, so it's the third year in a row, which is really interesting and very exciting for us.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be in 11 venues around the USA after Contact. So for those that are interested and want to come and see us around the USA, maybe later on I can rattle off some of the cities.
Sure.
Pretty much up the coast of California through Oregon and Washington and then down across. We'll be in Boulder as well, Boulder, Colorado, and then ending up in Atlanta at the end of May. So it's a full month tour of the USA.
Michael, you're one of our favorites. I constantly get requests for you and information about you. Let's go back a little bit when you started investigating humankind and ancient civilizations. What was the catalyst for you? What got you started?
Well, first of all, I want to just remind you that it's 10 years ago now that you and I first spoke.
I know that, yeah.
That's remarkable. While I was listening to you
like yesterday,
covering some of the other items, I was thinking back on, and I thought, oh my God, it's 10 years ago that I first met George and we spoke first time about Slave Species of God, which now has been renamed as Slave Species of the Gods and published by Baron Coe and Inner Traditions in Vermont. And, yeah, so to answer your question, what sparked me off was my own inquisitiveness and as a very early young child, looking up the sky and saying, I wonder how many people are out there living on the other stars like we are. And nobody provoked me to do that. It just came from within. It was a natural automatic response from a young child. And I only realized it much later in life, and that's fascinating that a young child could have those kind of ideas until you go to school and that all that gets beaten out of you, right?
Sure does. Sure does.
Exactly. And then the real catalyst for me is when I left high school and I went to university. I studied pharmaceutics at Wits University in Johannesburg for 5 years, and when I was 18 years old, I arrived as a freshman at the men's residence. And somebody dropped Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods in my lap and said, read this. And I picked up the book, and a week later, I was stunned and amazed and absolutely changed my life. that was really the beginning for me. Eric von Däniken, the big daddy, I believe, of the godfather of the modern age, alternative thinking in many ways.
Ironically, he's going to be at Contact in the Desert as well, so we're going to have an opportunity to look with him. He was on my program not too long ago, Michael, talking about his theories. Now, when you started investigating the Anunnaki, at what point was that epiphany with you where you said to yourself, my gosh, look at what I'm finding here. Look, I'm verifying some things. I'm discovering some things. I mean, was it shocking thinking that we had been visited? We may have been genetically altered?
It wasn't shocking. It was a pleasant confirmation of what many of us have known inside. You know, we carry this genetic memory, and all of us carry a genetic memory in us. But we don't realize that as we grow and go through this enslavement process, the indoctrination, the mind numbing, the mind control, the education system, and all the stuff that we are exposed to as living, breathing human beings, to be turned into, as Graham Hancock calls, a species with amnesia. And so it wasn't really shocking for me, George. It was more a comforting realization that what I was discovering was finding the physical evidence of this ancient vanished time in human history by finding the physical evidence of the ancient civilizations of Southern Africa. And that pretty much came right at the end of releasing Slave Species of God. That's 2006. So it was at that stage that I met a chap by the name of Jan Heine,
mm-hmm.
who had been photographing these strange circular stone structures, what we now call the stone circles, in Southern Africa. And the moment Jan showed me those photographs at one of my presentations, I knew that was the missing link and the clue that I've been looking for, and I knew that inextricably these circular stone ruins and stone structures were connected to my research of origins of humankind, the Anunnaki presence and activity on Earth, much of what Zachariah Sitchin had been writing about, for which many people still are trying to undermine poor Zachariah Sitchin.
Yeah.
And it's all just nonsense. They just speak from a lack of not having enough information, enough evidence. And it is, you know, there can be no doubt and no question in anybody's mind. All they have to look at is at two of my books, Adam's Calendar, Temples of the African Gods, which is now called African Temples of the Anunnaki, also published by Inner Traditions in Vermont. And your jaw will literally hang open in amazement when you see the physical evidence of that was left behind hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Now, these stone circle ruins, tell us the significance of what they are and how important it is to the research you were doing.
Well, like I said, it pretty much provides the physical evidence for much of what Sitchin had written about. And once again, I'm not saying that everything Sitchin wrote is accurate and true. Some of his interpretations were not 100% accurate, but those were still very clear indicators to show us in the right direction. But the stone circles are the remains of the Anunnaki and possibly even other groups of beings, because that we find at the southern tip of Africa, in South Africa, Zimbabwe, mainly these two countries, which, by the way, includes the Great Zimbabwe Ruins, which are spectacular ruins, ancient structures that really blow your mind when you go and visit Great Zimbabwe. And we do go visit those on our annual trips in what we now call the Sacred Sites Tour of Southern Africa with Michael Tillinger and Dean Leprini. And we just finished one such a tour, which literally it changes people's lives when you come out of this part of the world. You tap into a deep resonance in your genetic code that starts to change you as a physical being and change your ability to tap into the morphogenetic field and information that previously you were not able to tap into. It's like these ancient sites here in Southern Africa carry some sort of energetic key to reactivate our ability to connect. It's just fascinating. And these stone circles... you know, the historical fascination with these stone circles goes back 500 years when the first Portuguese explorers came around the Cape of Good Hope on their way to India from Portugal, and I think there may have been some Spaniards as well, but mostly Portuguese.
How big are the circles, Michael?
Well, the stone circles vary in size, from tiny ones from, let me speak in feet here, we converted, it's from, say, 5 meters across, so it'll be 15 feet, to 150 meters across, which is like 450 feet. So they vary in sizes. And the key thing here, George, is that While the researchers and explorers and archaeologists, if you can call them that, over the last 500 years, because archaeology is not even hardly 200 years old as a profession, these guys that were exploring it, and most of them were treasure hunters, unfortunately, as you know, caused a lot of damage because those early explorers were funded by, you know, powerful, wealthy individuals mm-hmm. who wanted to collect jewels and collect artifacts for their private collections, and they did. They collected a lot of priceless artifacts and tools that were, you know, raiders of the tombs, basically. That's what they were.
I'm convinced some rich person somewhere, Michael, has the Ark of the Covenant somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And you know who that rich person, which bloodline they belong to, right?
Stay with us, Michael. Going to take this quick break. We'll be back in a moment. Michael Tullinger with us for a few hours tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Michael Tullinger with us, of course. Michael, Zechariah Sitchin's thoughts were some 400,000 years ago. The Anunnaki, of course, came here and genetically altered human beings. Is your timeline about the same?
George, yes. Aspects of it, of the timeline, are the same. But the more you research the Anunnaki, the more you realize that we're not just dealing with a normal group of beings and individuals here. They are far more complex and mysterious than most of us can realize. And I think what Zechariah Sitchin had was he had one aspect of the Anunnaki presence on planet Earth, but there was a lot more going on here than just that particular time. And it seems that they may have been here millions of years prior to that, and somehow we missed that. And that was the main sort of thread, because that's when the genetic manipulation started happening, and that's why we resonate with that information so strongly. And that's you know, just before the break, you asked what is the significance of the stone circles, and we didn't really get to the answer of that question. So before we completely forget to answer that for your listeners, is the significance of the stone circles is that for the last 500 years, all the explorers and treasure hunters just automatically, and even modern-day historians and archaeologists today keep assuming that these are dwellings for people or animals. And even just a few months ago, Wits University, my old university, published an official book, a special history book, in which once again they state that the stone circles are the leftover from the Bakoni people who built all these stone circles about 250 years or between 250 and 350 years ago. And they talk about the channels that connect the stone circles as roads and paths that they had. And they say that this just shows and proof of how close a community it was, that all the homesteads were connected by paths. And it is just absolute drivel and nonsense that they put out to confuse people's minds, because this is really where the mistake has come in, and the misconception and the continued lying and confusing people and other scholars today. The stone circles have got nothing to do with dwellings for people or animals, or cattle kraal, as they've been called for, you know, more than 100 years now in South Africa, to house cattle, home for mm-hmm. cattle. And what I show, you know, without any doubt, that we're dealing with energy generating devices. Every stone circle is actually a very powerful energy generating device that has got nothing to do with dwellings. What unfortunately gets these poorly informed and generally not scientifically minded historians or archaeologists is that the original structure, the original stone circles, didn't have any doors and entrances, and some of them are concentric circles together, and they're all connected by these channels that look like paths or roads, but they got nothing to do with channels. They actually connect to energetic connectors between one and the other. And in later days, in later times, in the last 500 years or so, many of these stone circles have been occupied by African people that live in the area. They converted many of them into dwellings for themselves and into enclosures for their cattle and their animals, and they made doors and entrances into these circular structures. So many of them have got doors and entrances, but that's a later and a more recent modification. And that is the critical difference between calling it an occupied settlement and as opposed to the original structure. So we've got to just make very clear that people understand this. We're dealing with hundreds of thousands of years. These stone circles go back about 300,000 years ago, possibly more, and they are energy-generating devices, and in more recent times, they've been converted, some of them have been converted into dwellings, but by far the largest majority remains untouched and in its original form, because there were not millions of people living here in the last 500 years or 1,000 years, and therefore they could only have converted a few thousand or a small number of these stone circles. So it's a fascinating, convoluted story. And to really, your question about Zechariah Sitchin and the timeline of the Anunnaki falls perfectly in line with the sudden emergence of Homo sapiens, of our sort of timeline and our species some 300,000 years ago. And the phenomenal thing is that Adam's calendar, or what African shaman call Inzalo Yelanga, or a birthplace of the sun, where humanity was created by the gods, is directly connected to what Sitchin writes about, although he didn't even know about it, that such a place existed. It's before I could meet Zechariah, and was it 2010 that he died?
You're right around there, at 90 years old.
Yeah, 2010. I remember making contact with Zechariah on email, saying, I'll be in the USA in October. Is it possible for me to meet him? And this was in June or July that year, and he answered that he would love to meet with me, but he just came out of hospital, and he was recovering. And then by the time I finished my presentation in the UK, in the USA, the same month or the same day I was doing my last presentation in the USA, he actually died. So he never got to really experience, and I could never share with him the full extent of the discovery, because I believe that that would have given him a lot more understanding, and maybe he would have reached different conclusions on some of the translations of the Sumerian text.
I actually thought, Michael, that he was going to go on forever, but he was quite a guy. Now, because the Anunnaki, of course, they had high technology, did they ever pass any of it down to us, the slaves?
Well, they did, but they didn't pass it on to the slaves like, here's advanced technology, use it for your benefit. That's not the case here. It was more like they created technology that was used by the slave race, which is humanity, to work in the gold mines. And this is why, you know, we find strange-looking tools and strange-looking stone, mostly stone tools and artifacts that we don't understand. And because we don't understand the technology they used, we think, oh, these are just stupid stone tools and artifacts. And again, archaeologists that are completely scientifically devoid of stringing together a scientific thought, because they're not trained to think like that. And I'm sorry if I'm sounding really brutal about archaeologists, but most of them are not trained to think scientifically. And they come across these stone tools and artifacts that are advanced technology. We're dealing with silicon-based technology here, George. You know where I'm leading up to, right?
Yes, I sure do.
We're dealing with silicon-based technology that is made very simply with stone tools. And these poor guys come across it and they think, oh, these are primitive type like hammers or chisels or stone tools that you use to smack, bang, and hammer things into submission. And that's just, unfortunately, this kind of thinking that keeps us in the box. And the fascinating thing about this is you know what we didn't talk about, and I'm sure you're going to pop this question at your next moment is the gold connection, right?
That was coming up pretty soon. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry to jump the gun, but because I'm just talking about the tools and artifacts, some of these tools and artifacts that don't make any sense have been found in ancient gold mines and ancient gold passages mining tunnels and mining passages that have been consistently found over the last 100 years at least, that I have personal recall from people that have found such ancient tunnels from the 1920s and 30s all the way through to just a few months ago, where somebody in a mine, working in a modern mine today, accidentally, while they were working and drilling, suddenly a whole side of the wall collapsed, and it collapsed slightly below them into a mining tunnel that they entered and realized that this was obviously there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But the description of it was that it was made with such precision and such technology that we don't have that kind of technology today.
I love it.
And this is just this is from a few months ago, George.
That's like the pyramids, Michael. I mean, they still can't figure out how those were made.
Well, exactly. Well, we can make some suggestions based on the technology and the tools that I've been finding and stringing some of the thoughts together and the evidence. You know, again, what I do, and I guess all researchers and scientists do the same thing, you follow, you analyze the clues and the evidence, and you construct a scenario based on the clues and the evidence that you find and the tools that you find. And at the moment, there is no doubt whatsoever, and this has now been supported when my theories and my conclusions have been supported not just by hundreds but by thousands of scientists around the world that I've been in contact with emails and discussions about how the technology worked and how it was used. And we're dealing with silicon-based technology, we're dealing with sound and resonance as a source of energy, and we're dealing with phaser technology as opposed to laser technology. And this is the critical thing. We have in our hands, in my little museum here in the town of Waterfallsboven, where in South Africa, right in the middle of millions of ancient stone circles, we have ancient advanced technology that uses sound and resonance as a source of energy. It's mind-blowing stuff, this.
Why did the Anunnaki end up leaving, in your opinion?
That's a million-dollar question, and I don't think any one of us trying to figure out what really happened here has the correct answer at this stage.
Because they didn't come here to occupy. They came here to get gold, and they needed to make a worker because they got tired of doing it, so hence we became created. But then they left. Did they just get what they needed, you think?
Well, again, a million-dollar question. I think, first of all, the question is, you know, have they really left? Or did they leave? Did some of them leave and some stayed behind? And that's many people believe that that's the situation, that some left and the elite Anunnaki left,
the brothers
group left. Yeah, brothers and those connected to them left, and some of the others left behind, the Marduk, the what some call the vengeful god of the Old Testament, or you know the guy that portrays himself as the god of the Old Testament, and not the creator of all. There's a big difference. Again, this is why my book is called Slave Species of God, and God is spelled with a small G, because we got to first distinguish the difference between the true creator of all things in existence, the creation force, or the source of all creation, the God with a big G, as I call it, and then the gods with a small G, just advanced human beings who pose as God and the creator of humanity, who had the knowledge of genetic manipulation. Well, so do we today. We can genetically manipulate and create anything we bloody want. Some people are not aware of that yet, but this is true. So why did they leave? The question is, did they leave? I believe many of them left behind, and this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with that vengeful kind of controlling genetic trait that has become what we would call the global elite, the ancient banking and global royal bloodlines that run and manipulate the world today. Control the issuing of money, use money as the source of control through all our countries. I mean, just think about this. All the countries in the world, without possibly the exception of two that remain, that until very recently, say 15 or 20 years ago, had their own people's banks, state-controlled banks, central banks that were not controlled by the Rothschild Empire, Those countries were Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, North Korea, Cuba, and I'll probably forget one or two. And I think the penny starts to drop as to why the wars in some of these countries were initiated. Within weeks after the first bombs falling on Iraq, the Iraqi bank was closed and replaced by a Rothschild central controlled bank. And one starts to realize it's not really about the oil. It's all about the control of very important ancient resources, the tools and artifacts that were looted from the Baghdad Museum within hours after the first bombs falling on Baghdad, and you start realizing there's a much deeper cover-up happening here. And so these ancient bloodlines that are controlling or attempting to control the world today are losing their grip. I mean, many of your guests on your show probably speak about this in much greater detail than I do. But this is all connected. This is all connected to the origins of humankind, who we are as a species, what we are doing here, the connection to gold, our human obsession with gold. And you know very well, George, that it's virtually impossible to separate human origins and human history from our obsession with gold.
That's true. Michael, in ancient Indian texts, in writings, they talk about Brahmanas, flying machines. Might these machines have been left behind by the Anunnaki?
Well, many people claim they have, and this is why, again, when they discover, when modern-day the industrial military complex or any researchers discover anything like this, before you know it, the military is there. They swoop down. They shut things up. They restrict access to the site, and these kind of places are very quickly militarized and controlled so that they can protect this ancient technology, protect the knowledge from leaking out, and quickly start to ridicule anyone making these kind of ridiculous claims, and start reverse engineering this technology. Of course, we think that they're reverse engineering this technology. They may already have the knowledge of this technology. They just don't want it to get into the hands of the average Joe Schmo on the street.
Michael Tellinger, of course, is going to be in the United States very shortly on a special tour, and you can get that tour by going to his website at coasttocoastam.com. It's michaeltellinger.com. But real quickly, he's going to be in Joshua Tree, Irvine, California, San Francisco, Brentwood, California, Seattle, Trout Lake, Washington, Boulder, Colorado, Lincoln, Nebraska, Cincinnati, Atlanta. He's going to be all over the map here, so come on out and see him. He puts on one heck of a presentation. And will we ever, Michael, get these answers? I mean, Sitchin did what he did. You're doing what you're doing. Will we ever get modern geologists, anthropologists, scientists to come out and say, we were created by extraterrestrials who visited this planet. They left, but it happened. Will we ever get that?
Well, we're getting it already. We're getting it. Thousands of scholars and scientists are saying this. It's just that they don't belong to the cabal. They don't belong to the universities that are funded by the banking families. And this is the thing, George. We need to talk about the education system and the so-called universities. And unfortunately, this is the depth of the rabbit hole. You know, there is no bottom to the rabbit hole of deception. So unfortunately, what's happening, and many people are not aware of this, most people at this stage, which is a great shame, and we need to start changing this, and this is why the Ubuntu movement is so critical, and sooner or later we need to start talking about that. But the education system we have has nothing to do with teaching people skills for life or teaching people real skills. It's all about indoctrination and teaching people fear of authority and preparing our children and our youth to become a future labor force so they can perpetuate this thing of the need and the use of money. And the higher you go up this education chain, up to, you know, a graduate, then a postgraduate, then a master's, then a doctorate, and then a PhD, the higher you get, the more indoctrinated you become, and the more they put you on a pedestal. And as long as you toe the line and you work for the university and you work for the department that funds your research, you will have to say specific
That's
things.
That's right. And you stay on that pedestal. Michael, we're going to come back and talk more with you about slave species of the gods, and we'll take some calls as well.